Welcome to the Rocky Messages Podcast. Rocky is a gathering of people that want to know Jesus and love like him. If you hear something today that you'd like to know more about, you should check out our other podcast, Rocky Unscripted, where we take a topic and through conversation and study, we go a little bit deeper. And right now, let's join today's message.
Love both those guys. Alan and Sean have had so much influence in my life and my leadership over the last 10 years. Thankful for everything that they've done for our church. And today, Rocky, we're turning 40. Come on, we're turning 40. The big 4-0, it's a big deal. As some have reminded, we are officially a middle-aged church, okay? We are into our 40s. And I want to take a little bit of time this morning, you know, just to look back a little bit, to really grasp that. I mean, 40 years, that's four decades of prayers that have been prayed in the midst of our campuses, and 40 years of worship, 40 years. 40 years of sermons, and some of them have been longer than others, but there's been, you know, 40 years of preaching the gospel. 40 years, 40 decades. I think about, you know, if the walls could talk, you know, of our church buildings, they've seen some things over 40 years. They've seen, you know, probably hundreds of thousands of handshakes and millions of smiles. They've seen tears and they've seen laughter. 40 years. A lot of ministry has happened over four decades. And there's something to be celebrated just in the midst of that number. You know, we celebrate things in our culture of longevity, of relationships and commitments and things like that. And it is worth celebrating that our church has had some incredible great years, and there's been some difficult years, but our church has been committed to the mission that God has called us to. And there is something to be said that we have made it 40 years. I'm so proud of our church. I'm thankful I've been able to be a part of that for the last 10. And yet there's something bigger than just the number. Because in the midst of the number are you and me. In the midst of the number are people and so many stories. Stories of life change, stories of baptism, stories of people who never knew who Jesus was in some way, somehow, through a ministry of Rocky or through an invitation from you or from a message on a Sunday morning. Somewhere, somehow, through the ministry of the local church, is how God has ordained it, that he is using you and me, he's using us to reach people with the gospel. Some of you are that story. Your story of life change. You are walking around grasping for hope, and somewhere along the way you bumped into Jesus and your life has never been the same. 40 years of those stories. That if we would get around the, you know, the campfire or the table this morning and have a cup of coffee, those are the stories that we would tell. The things that we have seen God do in and through your life and through the lives of the people around you. There is so much to celebrate. And as I look back at the last 40, I can't help but get a little excited of looking into the future. In the next decade and potentially the next 40 years. I've been joking, you know, with Dane, who made that video for us, our worship pastor this past week. I was joking with him to go, what do you think we're going to look like in 40 years? Are people going to watch this video and go, wow, that look at Matt when he had hair. That was crazy. You know, that's so cool. Now, it just so happens, and I think God has a sense of humor sometimes, it just so happens that April 1st was our birthday as a church. We were born April 1st, 1984. Just so happens that in 12 days, I too will turn 40. I know what you're thinking. Man, he looks so good for 40. I tell you. But I'm going to be turning 40. And in the midst of about to turn 40, here's what I realized. And this is kind of what I want to talk about, you know, with you as a church this morning. That as you get older, things start to change, don't they? As you get older, things begin to change. For example, as I've gotten older, as I'm creeping up on 40, I'm very aware that my metabolism is not what it once was. There was a day where I could eat anything and everything and you wouldn't notice. And now all of a sudden I am very aware that it is very difficult to eat the things I want to eat and also maintain a healthy weight. Anybody with me? Yeah, old people in the room. You know what it's about. Young people are like, we have no idea what he's talking about. You will, okay? Just wait till you get to 40. You know, you realize this, as you get older, things begin to change. You start having some more wrinkles. There's a little bit more gray in the beard. You know, there's some mornings when you try to get out of bed, it's more like an Olympic sport for you. You know, it's just, you don't understand why your body hurts because, you know, you didn't even do anything the day before, but there's just new kind of aches and pains. And if you're like me, you begin to realize your body starts making all kinds of new noises you didn't realize, okay? There's just some things that change as you get older. But I would also remind us as a church this morning that there's also some things that stay the same. There's some things that don't change. In my life, for example, my love for my family has not changed. When I turn 40, I'm not all of a sudden going to go, I don't love you guys anymore. I'm 40. Okay, that is not going to happen. There's just some things that will be consistent as I grow old. Not everything changes. And when I turn 40 in 12 days, I think I'm going to believe that Chick-fil-A is the best chicken sandwich. Okay, it's not changing. I'm hanging on to it. Some things don't change. My love for Jesus and for his local church, I don't think is going to change. But some things do change. And it's a reminder for us this morning as a church, as we continue to get older, what things need to stay the same and what things should change. What should we be excited about when we go, no, this thing is never going to change? And what things should we be excited about that we go, oh yes, we need that to change. We hope that changes because we are getting older. I'm very aware, and so are you. In the last couple of months, we've been in a season of transition. There has been change in, as we've been leading up to our 40th birthday as a church. And I just want to remind you, and this is a good reminder for me, in that as my title has changed over the last couple of weeks here at Rocky, I am excited and confident to say this, that our mission and values have not. While there's some things that are changing around here, the core of who we are, I'm telling you, is staying the same, and it should stay the same. The mission of our church, know Jesus and love like him, is not changing. It is not changing. This is the direction, this is the call that we have from Jesus in Matthew chapter 28, where he is essentially launching his local church. And there's a bunch of different ways that you could say that and explain that. But here at Rocky, we just go, hey, you know what we're going to be about as a church? Here's our mission. We're going to know Jesus and we're going to love like him. It is so simple, yet it is so profound. And as I was thinking this week, okay, you know, as we're talking about, you know, what needs to change and what needs to stay the same on our 40th birthday, I thought about this story. One of my favorite stories. It's found in a couple of the Gospels. I'm going to be in Luke chapter 4 today, but it's a story about Peter and some fishermen. And before we kind of get to the fishing part, Peter, he was, you know, one of the first, you know, followers of Jesus, and he eventually will become the first local pastor at the first church in the story in the book of Acts. And Peter, he's been hanging out with Jesus for a little bit. He's saw some things, and he's kind of getting a beat on who Jesus is. And there's a story in Luke chapter 4 where essentially, you know, they're at church or at synagogue, and they're walking home from the synagogue, and Peter invites Jesus over to his house for lunch. And as they're walking, Peter kind of, you know, leans into the conversation and really tells Jesus why he got the invitation. It wasn't just to feed Jesus lunch, but also Peter had his mother-in-law at his house who was sick. And so, you know, Peter essentially says to Jesus, hey, you know, since you're coming over for lunch, could you maybe do me a solid, do me a favor? I've seen you do some things, but could you potentially heal my mother-in-law, get a lot of points with the wife? And so Jesus goes, I got you. And so he goes over to Peter's house, and he eventually does heal Peter's mother-in-law. But the issue was that Jesus did the miracle on the Sabbath, which was a big deal in that custom in that day, because you weren't allowed to, you know, work on the Sabbath, and healing somebody was considered to be work. And so the word gets out. Peter tries to keep it kind of hush-hush, doesn't want the story to get out, but the story kind of begins to spread through the town. And then this is where we jump in, Luke chapter 4, verse 40. And it says this, Luke tells us, at sunset, because they've heard of all the stories and about Peter's mother-in-law, at sunset, the people brought to Jesus all who had various kinds of sickness, and laying his hands on each one, he healed them. Now, don't forget this. Peter's watching all of this happen. Verse 42, and then at daybreak, Jesus went out to a solitary place, and the people were looking for him. And when they came to where he was, they tried to keep him from leaving them. Very interesting, verse 43, but he said, guys, look, I must proclaim the good news. This is why I'm here. This is why I have come. I must proclaim the good news of the kingdom of God to the other towns also, because that is why I was sent. And he kept on preaching in the synagogues of Judea. So Jesus is hanging out with Peter. He performs a miracle with Peter's mother-in-law. Word gets out. Now everybody's bringing their sick, and Jesus is healing them. But then it is time to go, and they're going, no, 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 don't go. Stay with us. And if you were there, you'd be saying the same thing. No, Jesus, stay with us. And Jesus says, no, 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 let me remind you why I'm here. There are still others who have yet to hear the message of good news that I'm preaching, so I have to go. I have to go to the other towns and the other villages. Let me jump into chapter 5. And one of my questions always in telling this story is, I don't know how much time happens between chapter 4 and chapter 5. Some biblical scholars say it could be a couple of weeks. Some say a couple of months. The truth is, we don't know. But I would say this, Peter is still watching Jesus. He had a close encounter with him in chapter 4. Then we get to chapter 5, and Luke just says one day. We don't know how long, but one day. Maybe a couple of weeks, maybe a couple of months, but one day, as Jesus was standing by the Sea of Galilee, the people were crowding around him and listening to the word of God. This is the rhythm Jesus finds himself in. Stories are out. People are coming to hear what he's saying. They continue to bring the sick. It's a good reminder for all of us in the room this morning that following Jesus does not begin with faith. It does not even begin with belief. Just about for all of us, it started with questions and curiosity. And if you were hanging out with us last week at Easter and you're still not quite sure and kind of where you stand with God, but you've come back and you've got your concerns and you've got your questions. And I'm glad you're here, because all of us in the context of our journey with Jesus started there. We all started there. This is where this crowd is. They're just showing up. They don't get it all. They don't understand the, you know, in the fullness of who Jesus is, but they've heard some things, and he's worth showing up for to hear what he says. And so he's teaching. In verse 2, and Jesus saw at the water's edge two boats left there by the fishermen who were washing their nets. And the reason why they were washing their nets is because they fished at night. So they've come in after a long night of fishing. They are cleaning their nets, ready to go home. And then verse 3, Jesus just gets into one of their boats. Maybe he asked, maybe he didn't, but he just hops it. And the one, he jumps into the one belonging to Simon, or we know him as Peter, and asked him to put out a little from shore. And then he sat down and he taught the people from the boat. So we've got Peter back into the story. We saw him in Luke chapter 4 with the mother-in-law. He's back here in Luke chapter 5. Fishing. Jesus is teaching. The crowd is getting larger. The boat now becomes his stage, his platform. Verse 4, and when he had finished speaking, he said to Peter, put out into deep water and let down your nets for a catch. So Jesus gets done teaching. He gives Peter an invitation. He essentially says to the fishermen, let's go fishing. Peter, aren't you a fisherman? I see you out here. I see you cleaning your nets. Hey, I'm in the mood for fishing. I just got done preaching. All right, so let's go do some fishing. But I want to go fish into deep waters, Peter. I want to go out into the deep parts of the sea. In verse 5, Simon answered, Master, which is a sign of respect, listen, we've worked all night and haven't caught anything. Meaning, Jesus, I don't know if you know this, but the best time to fish is at night, and we've been out all night and we haven't caught any fish, and you're not going to catch any fish during the day. Come on, you can trust us. We're fishermen because we know this thing. This is kind of our thing. And aren't you a carpenter? Right? Listen, if we want some advice about building a table, we'll come to you. But we're fishermen, and I'm sure you're kind of tired too anyways, right? Because you're a rabbi and you just preached. And but the verse goes on, verse 5, but Peter goes, okay, but because you say so and because you did me a solid, you know, in chapter 4 by healing my mother-in-law, because you've served me, I will let down the nets. I'll humor you, Jesus. You've done a lot of things for me already, so okay, if you want to go into the deep waters, let's go. Now, here's the thing, because you could read this story and you can just kind of go right on by this narrative, but this is such a huge moment for Peter, and he has no idea. This is a huge moment for Peter. He has no idea what's about to happen. He has no idea about the invitation he is about to receive. He is thinking this is an invitation to go fishing with a rabbi who is not a fisherman. He's tired. He's ready to clock out. He's ready to be home. This is a waste of time in his mind. And this is only taking up the free time he has before he needs to go out fishing again the next night. And Peter has no idea what hangs in the balance when it comes to this decision. Because if Peter decided not to go fishing with Jesus this day, then there's a really good chance that we wouldn't even know his name. Anybody in here named Peter? Just raise your hand real high. Anyone in here named Peter? One person. There you go. If Peter didn't say yes to go fishing, you wouldn't even be named Peter. Your name would be like Bill or Bob or Frank, okay? The only reason his name is Peter is because 2,000 years ago, he received an invitation from Jesus to go fishing and he took it. And my guess is he didn't even want to. But he goes. And he says yes. We have no idea. I'm convinced of this. We have no idea what hangs in the balance when we say yes to whatever it is God is asking us to do. And not only do we not know what hangs in the balance, we don't know who hangs in the balance when we respond to the calling of God. For some of us, and I'm talking about me as well, for some of us, there's moments in our journey of faith that we get a little flat, gets a little boring. We get our life under control. We make it all neat and tidy, and every once in a while, we get challenged to get out of our comfort zone, and we get called into the deep part, but we just kind of talk ourselves out of it because we got it and we know better. And you have no idea what hangs in the balance of your decision of doing or not doing what God is asking you to do. My guess is years later, Peter would look back at this and think to himself, oh my gosh, I cannot believe I almost said no. I can't believe it. In fact, without Jesus, you know, helping me out with my mother-in-law, I probably would have declined his invitation. But he says, yes. Verse 6, and when they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. These fishermen had no idea that they were about to experience the greatest fishing story they would ever tell for the rest of their life. They almost said no, they say yes, they go out to deep waters, and they are catching so much fish. Imagine the excitement on the boat, verse 7, and so they signaled their partners in the other boat to come and help them, and they came, and they filled both boats so full that they began to sink. It is chaos. Have you ever seen a boat begin to sink because there is too many fish on the boat? I have not. Imagine if you were on shore watching this. The excitement, I mean, they've got to be almost throwing fish off of the boat, which is counterintuitive for a fisherman. It's wild. It is loud. People are screaming. There is excitement. There is wonder. There is all kinds of new belief in what could be possible. And in the midst of the chaos, verse 8, when Simon Peter saw this, when he's seeing the story that's happening in front of him, he knows the reason why they're catching so many fish has nothing to do with him. He is very aware that it has everything to do with the other guy in the boat. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and he said, go away from me, not master, Lord. Things are changing. And Peter says, and here's why. I am a sinful man. I am not on the same level as you. We might be inches apart in this boat, but spiritually speaking, I'm miles away. And Jesus in this moment was changing things. He was making a change. In this moment, Peter's assumption is that God keeps a distance from sinners just like every other religious person has taught Peter. But Jesus was changing it up. Now, being a sinner doesn't disqualify you from following Jesus. Jesus makes it a prerequisite. He's making a change. Verse 9, for he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken, and so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. And then Jesus said to Peter, don't be afraid, Peter. Things are about to change. Don't be afraid. I know you're a fisherman, but from now on, you are going to fish for people. He looks at these guys who are eventually going to follow him and be his disciples, and he says, guys, I've got some new plans for you. I've got something different for you. Let's go change the world together. I know you're about fishing for fish, but now I want you to spend the rest of your life fishing for people. And we don't have, you know, any other, you know, clarifying questions that maybe the disciples were asking. If we were there, we might go, well, Jesus, where are you going? And how long are you going to be traveling? And how much do we need to follow you? And how much is it going to cost? And, you know, what's going to be required of us? But whatever these guys have seen, whether it was just this story, this fishing story, or mother-in-law's being healed, or whatever else they've seen, the invitation from Jesus was too generous for them not to accept. They take it. They are wowed out of their mind that this guy would offer them the opportunity to be their rabbi. And then this next verse, verse 11, I think it's one of the wildest verses. It says, so they pulled their boats up on shore, left everything, and followed him, including all the fish in the boat, which is wild to me. The fishermen who've been waiting for a catch like this their whole life, it didn't matter anymore because Jesus offered them something greater. And Luke tells us they got to shore, they stepped out of their boat, and they followed him. And all these guys will die with nothing, including regret. They live a totally different life. Now, I've already told you, we're not changing up our mission statement here. I love it. There's no need to change it. It is simple and profound to know Jesus and love like him. But if I was to change it, okay? And I'm not. But if I was, in light of Luke chapter 5, you could say it like this. Know Jesus and fish like him. Which I think would be kind of cool. We would be known as like the fishing church. You know what I mean? We'd brand ourselves. You know, you get baptized and we give you a fishing pole. And we're like, hey, we got a pond in the back. It's filled with fish. Jesus does this whole metaphor with us about fishing for people. But you just catch a fish. And then they catch a fish. And then we're like, yeah, now you go and do likewise. You know, we just be the fishing church, you know. Know Jesus and fish like him. And what is Jesus trying to catch when he fishes? People. And why is he fishing for people? Matthew tells us, chapter 9, I mean, Jesus was very consistent in the why of why he was here. Verse 35, Matthew tells us, Jesus went through all the towns and villages, exactly what he told his disciples he was going to do, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. That was his why. That's his, boy, this is why I'm here. This is why I'm doing what I'm doing. He keeps going, verse 36, when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them, because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. And then look at this, verse 37. Then he said to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. In fishing terms, the pond is filled with fish. Nobody's fishing. Nobody's fishing. But if they would go fishing, they would probably catch some fish. Jesus sees the incredible potential for people who have yet to discover who he is to be spiritually nourished by his teaching, by his words, by his life. And he looks at his disciples and says to them, however, there's a lack of people to guide and to teach and to fish. Meaning Jesus cares deeply about people who are lost and suffering and hurting. And there's always going to be a constant need for his followers to share his message of love and hope. So then he says to his guys, verse 38, so guys, ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into the harvest field. We are called to fish. As insiders of the church, we are called to look outside of the church and see what Jesus sees. Filled with compassion, people who have yet to discover the fullness of who God is. And friends, I would remind all of us this morning, including me, that we have a rich history here at Rocky of 40 years. It is filled with so many stories of life transformation. But I would also remind us there are things that will change, that need to change, like this. Our message, the gospel of who Jesus is, will never change, but our methods do. Our methods do. It is not 1984 anymore. Do you know that? The methods that we used in 1984, they need to change because it's 2024, and your kids and your kids and your kids' kids' kids are worth it. I'm not the best fisherman in the world, but I know this. When I go out to the pond and I throw that lure out, if I'm not catching any fish, I change up the lure. I change it up until I find what is catching fish. Our message does not change. Every once in a while, somebody will creak in with some critique and they're going to go, oh, you guys are watering down the gospel. You're not preaching the fullness of the gospel. That's nonsense. We've been preaching Jesus for 40 years. But as a church, you know what we do? Because we want to be a church that's going to last another 40 years, we look at the culture in which we live and into the future, and we go, what lures need to change? Because the world is changing. And if we're going to be a church that isn't going to be shutting our doors in 10 years, then we've got to be a church that goes, listen, our message is rock solid. It is Jesus. It is the only way to the Father. Now, what lure, what best way are we going to communicate that story to a world who is lost and broken? The message stays the same. But just because we change the method does not mean we're not fishing appropriately. It's a good thing that Rocky doesn't look like exactly how it was 40 years ago, and I hope 40 years from now, it looks much different than it looks today. We have to be okay. We should continue to be a church for people who are skeptical of what we believe, who over time just might become a little envious of how we treat one another and amazed about how we treat them. We should be a church that continues to invite more people to come and hear in the hopes that they, in our hopes that they might choose to follow Jesus just like we did. Because here's what I think is true. Here's something that hasn't changed in 40 years at Rocky, that there are still adults and children and middle and high school students in our area who have not heard or who have not responded to the truth of Jesus. And as a church, we have an amazing opportunity to have an impact in people's lives, knowing that we do not save people, that God is the one who saves people, but his part of his method with his message is that he uses the local church to further his story all throughout the world. And it's tough work. It's really tough work. And sometimes people kind of creep into that conversation. They start saying things like this. All Rocky cares about, all you guys care about is numbers. You just want to be a big church. And I just really want to look at them and go, stop it. Stop it. Come on. And I get it. That conversation plays so easy in our culture and some of your circles that you hang with and at your dinner table. Oh, Rocky, they just want to be a big church and big, big, big. They just care about numbers. But you've got to know our heart is for people. But numbers represent people. If I said to you, Rocky, come on, it's your 40th birthday. If I said to you, hey, this year, our 40th year, this year as a church, do you want to see 50 baptisms or 500? Yeah, 500. And I'm not standing up here and going, oh, I can't believe you would say 500. You're all about the numbers. No, we're all about the people, because every number is a story of potential life change. That's where we're at, right? About to kick this stool over, you know what I'm saying? I mean, come on, stop it. Oh, they're just about numbers. The reason why they're growing, because they've dumbed down the gospel. No, we have told the gospel as clearly and simply as we could so people can understand it. That's deep water fishing. We're on the hook. Matthew chapter 28, Jesus says, go and tell them what you have seen. So we go. And we tell and we share, and I hope this church continues to grow. And if you're here this morning, you're like, well, I just don't like that. Okay, well, just hang up a second, because I found something this week that I was reminded of. And if you don't want Rocky to be a big church, and you can go find Alan Algram, who's our founding lead pastor, and yell at him, okay? Because here's the deal. In the DNA of our church is this concept of a healthy, growing church. Not for the sake that we get to say, look at us, but we get to go, look at what God is doing. And I found something this week. It gets me so giddy. I'm going to figure out how to like print this out. I'm going to put it up on my wall in my office. And when people come in and they're feeling the tension of things are changing and Rocky is growing, I'm going to go, read that. This has been in our history for 40 years. And I don't think this idea should change. This was a newsletter that Alan would send out every month. It was called the Rocky Mountain View. This one was dated June 20th, 1984. Just a couple years after we were born. By the way, April 1st, when this church was born, I was not yet. Some of you weren't either. Okay, so here's what Alan said. Pitching a little vision to this new church, this baby church. June 20th, 1984, he says this, Rocky Mountain Christian Church was established with an, and I love that he put this word here, unapologetic growth philosophy. Alan, 40 years ago, God is leaning into him, calling him to plant this church, and Niwot, Colorado goes, we will not apologize for growth. From the earliest days of the planning process, it was intended to establish a dynamic regional ministry. We are committed to the large church concept, believing that the Great Commission and the needs of our culture can be more effectively addressed through the varied and multiple ministries of the large congregation. Friends, that's where we started. That's where we come from. The vision for this movement of this local church was to go, we want to be as wide and as high and as broad as we can be with the storytelling. We should feel it. What a responsibility to keep the vision moving forward. To go, we're not satisfied. There's so many things to celebrate, but there's still more. There's still more to be done. And here's what I find, okay, even just in this conversation, the reason why so many people have such a difficult time in the context of the size of churches, because the critiques that go, you know, at the large church, more than not, the reason why those people are critiquing large church, because they're thinking about themselves. And we're going to be a church that's thinking about the fish in the deep water. Oh, you didn't know. Let me remind you who we are. Rocky Mountain Christian Church, we are deep sea fishing people. We go to the deep waters. We go fishing where Jesus fishes. That's where Jesus started 2,000 years ago. That was also instilled in the heart of our founding pastor 40 years ago. And I think that should stay the same. April 1st, 1984. Here's what Alan said. And if 40 years from now they watch this video, I hope they just go, this is what Matt said, okay? Because this is good. Alan Algren, Matt Cody.
Okay, here's what he said. First service ever. Here's what he said. I believe. Alan has no idea what is to come. Here's what he says. I believe we're here on purpose and that we should have great expectations for what God is going to do in the decades to come. Whew. That shouldn't change. Matt Cody said that. That should not change, friends. Jesus, where are you going? Hey, friend, just come follow me. Yeah, but where? We're going fishing in the deep waters. You know the heart of our church is? Where that's where you are, and that's where we want to be. Fishing with you. That should never change. I'm going to pray, and then we're going to sing a song together. We're going to close out the service, and I hope that this last song that our team wrote here, I hope you sing as an anthem for the next decade to come, that God, you lead, we'll follow. And where you are, that's where we want to be too. Let me pray for us. Father, this morning we thank you for the reminder of a story that changed a fisherman's life. You offered an invitation to Peter, and here we are 2,000 years ago, and you offer it to us today to follow you into the future, not knowing all the answers to all of our questions. But we know this one thing: the closer we are to you, the better it will be. So lead us as a church to be the kind of fishermen you want us to be for the here and now, 2024, in Frederick, in Niwot, in Colorado, that we might go fishing with you and potentially have a fishing story one day that goes something like this. There were so many fish. We had an incredible catch. And the only way we can tell it is that Jesus was in the boat. We love you. We thank you for loving us first. And it's in your name we pray. Amen.